This is a change to welcome presentation. We have extended an invitation of Dr. Nyembeza, based at Pachipatu. And some of us might not have read some of his writings. It would be important that we get a sense of his approach to economics, especially as it pertains to water. It tells me that he has had some runs with one of the ministers and one of the other panel that deals with water. I've not met him in person. Have been referred by one of the water pundits in this country. That doctor might share with you some bit of light on a few areas that are dealing with. We shall see next week. We have a new member of parliament, Majestown, in this committee. Not a new member, but a new member in this committee.
As well as a new member of
parliament. You also knew. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
Have you been baptized? They baptize you here either with water or with fire.
Thank you. We are not related here,
We're not friends here. We are here to do our work, which is oversight. I normally say to people, if you close that door and just eavesdrop, get to listen to all the conversations. And I tell people that you will not be sure whether that person who is speaking is this person or that person. We were bound together by one single object of them to make sure that the department deliver on its promise mandate. I can assure you also, if we're power, some of the managers here, there are some that are doing a very good job, I must say. But we also do have some that are not doing their job. So we have no friends, we have no relatives, we are simply here to our job. Enjoined by our constitution that we hold the relative to account. In China, they say the people are the supervisor. We are that supervisor as public representatives for the work of government. Now that's in a nutshell, all in the name of welcome, Mr. Hoyer, a new member of parliament who has just joined us. I'm listening to him deduct rather deduce that he is indeed from Western Cape. Welcome, sir. Okay, without waste of time, welcome to all those members that have just joined us. We only got three apologies. We have four. One is from the Minister of Water and Sanitation, the Cabinet Mission. One other thing that we did to members is that we have actually extended the invitation to the APK Pension Department, Upper Member Fund. You remember the President launched a program somewhere in 2010 that the members of finance is specific that talked about dealing with sanitation challenges in schools. So we have since approached the Department of Education. Thank you, Minister Wilson, and your team. So the education team is here. There is also an apology from the Minister of Basic Education, she had raised a keen interest to join us, Mrs. Howler. She is on sick leave and also in Australia for is attending another meeting, a committee meeting. Those are the only few approaches that we have. What I propose is to, before we get into any other questions, we allow the Department of Education, Basic Education, to submit to us on the mandate that they have for the materials with sanitation in schools. We did attempt at some point in Northwest joining the appropriations and also joining the appropriations committee. There are some others doing work in schools related to sanitation. The Department of Basic Education also does have its own budget that deals with sanitation. Ideally, that relationship, I hope it does exist, that cooperation can have in all is the innovation, the technologies that are at the disposal of all in the government. Perhaps being a mechanism that allows them to make use of such innovations and technologies. Before those technologies go out of the country and get all these accords, charity must begin here at home for us to be able to say we are indeed going the right direction. So that's what I would propose we do, the members, so that we don't allow or get the Department of Education to be with us for the whole day, having come here for 8 minutes. If that is fine, we shall get the education, introduce themselves, who they are, and how many are they, and then take us through. The submission is with us. It looks like this. I hope we all should get it. Apologies that we get it now. What is important is for us to get to listen to what they have shared. And then we shall all combine that discussion with our own discussion on basic education. What is that education program?
Pardon? Basic education? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honorable members and colleagues. The presentation that we are going to be doing, that is the outline of the items that we will be addressing in the presentation, starting with indicating what is the scope of work in terms of sanitation, and what is the progress that we have made, and the technologies that we have used. Chair referred to the technologies that are resident in the Department of Water and Sanitation. That item would talk to the collaboration that we have with the Water Department through its officials at the Water Research Commission. And we will expand on that during the course of the presentation. That is the purpose. Now, Chair, just to give a quick background, the Department of Basic Education has got an infrastructure program that is guided by the norms and standards for school infrastructure that have got specific targets. Now, in March this year, as we all know, we had an unfortunate incident where a young learner in the Eastern Cape fell into a pit toilet. Immediately after that, the president of the country issued an instruction that we need to conduct an audit of the situation as far as sanitation is concerned in our schools, specifically with reference to pit toilets. That we did, and this is what we are going to indicate is the outcome of that audit that we conducted and was presented to the President at the end of June, and what is the progress that we are making in terms of addressing that. So in terms of the Northern Standards that I referred to earlier, the target was that by 2021 we should have addressed soil sanitation issues in the country, which is in line with what we are going to present and what the President has instructed us to do. So what we do have now out of the body was that you have schools that are without sanitation. I'm happy to announce that at this stage we do not have schools across the country, across the 24,000 schools that we have in the country, that do not have any form of sanitation. That part has been addressed. Then we do have schools that are still using pit toilets. And our Northwest standard, I see some of the colleagues that we went with when we drew the Northwest standard sometime in 2013 or so, by the Department of Water and Sanitation in terms of this standard. Our Northwest standards are very clear in terms of pit toilets and the fact that they are not an acceptable form of sanitation. Then the third category that came up is schools that were provided with proper sanitation through our different programs, but the pit toilets were not demolished. So you would have a school that was provided with a flush or with a VIP toilet or with some form of a sanitation that is aligned with the Northwest Standard, but the pit toilet is still remaining there, it's not demolished. And unfortunately, this is the category where you have not learned in the district case that fell into the pit toilet in the district case, because that school had sufficient sanitation, but the pit toilet was still demolished. The reason why it happened is that in many instances, communities, when we provide them with those sanitation, they will say, this building or these toilets were built by us through our own efforts. So you leave them there as a legacy of the work that we did, or that was done by our parents or grandparents and so on. That's the situation that we deal with on a daily basis. Then you've got sanitation that is not fit for purpose or age appropriate. What we mean here, there are two categories. You will have learners at primary schools starting from grade R to grade 4, which are your young learners, small learners. So you have to provide appropriate sanitation facilities for those young ones. The second category is sanitation for your disabled students. And then the last category is your schools with insufficient sanitation. This phenomenon is more pronounced in your Western Cape and Gauteng provinces as a result of the influx of people from other provinces and other areas. So you have a school that was provided with proper sanitation, but because of an increase in learner number, the number of toilet seats is not sufficient to cater for that number of learners in that school as a result of the increased enrollment. Now, the audit, what was done was that we conducted the audit and did a verification with all the schools and posted that audit. And we have two programs, what is referred to as the ACD program, Accelerated School Infrastructure Delivery Initiative. That is a program that is managed by the Department of Basic Education nationally, and then we have provincial programs. So we filtered out those projects that are implemented in those two programs. And the assumption was that in the costing that we did is that all toilets will be built with brick and mortar and will generally be dry sanitation. I will expatiate on this later on in this presentation. And of course, in the estimates, we made provision for the demolition of unpit toilets and assumed that schools would require a borehole. You will see in the presentation that the majority of schools that still have got challenges with sanitation are schools in our deep rural areas where you would necessarily have a challenge with the provision of water, hence the need to provide dry sanitation solutions. And in terms of implementation, we make provision for the different types of fees in terms of the implementation of the project. and also that we made provision that the material and the procurement strategies and technologies that will be implemented as we move into the implementation stage would, the prices would differ as you go into those areas. Now, this is the slide that shows where we were at the beginning in June when we presented the audit to the minister and the president. Now, the first column, I'll just take it a little bit slow so that you all understand. The first column is not the number of schools in the country. It's the number of schools that have some form of a sanitation issue. Whether it might be the need for a grade R toilet, or it might be a need for additional sanitation toilet seat. It might be that the school has got a pit latrine. So it's an aggregation. So if you add the other columns, they are not necessarily going to give you the 10,000, because you might find that a school might have a pit toilet, it might not have a grade R facility, and so on. Then the next column is schools with pit latrines only. So that is, these are schools that are solely relying on pit latrines. So out of the 25,000 schools in the country, we still, at that point, we still have 3,898 schools that were relying on pit toilets. Then you had 3,040 schools that were provided with proper sanitation, but the pit toilets were not provided. Then you've got 7,274 schools that still need your grade R facilities, sanitation facilities. And you've got 2,103 schools that need additional things, whether it might be a disabled toilet or additional toilet facilities. So that is the state of play in terms of the challenge that we had at that point. And we also went on to cost that exercise to say out of the, now this costing starts off with your, basically we costed the pit toilet because we regarded that as a priority. I will talk about maintenance, operation and maintenance at the later stage because that is a part of the ongoing infrastructure provision. So the pit toilet, if you disaggregate it into secondary schools and primary schools, for primary schools you are going to need 36,150 toilet seats, and for primary schools you are going to need 26,787 for secondary school kids, and 6,319 grade passes. Now, we made a provision because the majority of those, if you look at the provinces on the first column, you have Northwest, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, Free State, and KB, and then you do not have KZN, Gauteng, and Western Cape, and Northern Cape, then because with reference to pit toilets, these have been addressed in those provinces. We do not have pit toilets in those three provinces. So we made provision for a sinking of a borehole to provide water, and we also made a provision for demolition. And your professional service provider fee, and if you are going to use an implementing agent, which brings us to the 8 billion that was needed at that time to provide to address that challenge. And this is just an explanation of what is included in that cost. That cost is based on the VIP toilet, demolition cost, provision of for bombs to some of the schools, your PNG escalation, and your PSP fees. We expect them at 6% with a 5% disbursement and implementing agencies at around 5%. This map shows you the distribution of the schools that we are talking about. If you look at the aggregation of where the challenge is, you your biggest challenge is in your eastern part of the Eastern Cape, your Transkei area. KZN, it's kind of all over the place, but the concentration is in the Zululand area. And then you've got your Limpopo, where the concentration is in the Kukuni and in the Vembe area. And then you've got some other cities here and there in the northwest, in the Free State, and in Mpumalanga. The next map just shows you the concentration. The Eastern Cape is almost spread across the province, but as I said, the concentration, if you drill deeper into the province, you realize that a large number of schools are in your Zululand area. The same thing with the Eastern Cape, as an educated area, that your challenge is based largely in your eastern part of the Eastern Cape, your Transkei area. The progress that we have made so far, we have a program chair where we are providing what we call a city, where we are eradicating your mud structures and replacing them with proper sanitation. So obviously, if we have a mud structure, there is no way that we have a proper toilet next to a mud structure. So we are providing a full solution. So if you look at the last column on the ACIDI, where we are replacing the mud structures, we are replacing 367 mud structures. To date, we are at 210, and those 210 schools have been provided with the proper sanitation. There is still 100 that is under construction and 57 that are still in procurement. So these schools will also be provided with proper sanitation. Different types of sanitation depending on the location. In some instances, it's a VIP toilet. In some instances, we use a different technology as advised by the Water Research Commission. And you have a program that specifically in a city, that specifically provides, we are providing sanitation facilities to schools. We are implementing 949 projects, and to date, 632 of those projects have been provided with proper sanitation. 252 are in construction and 65 are still in the design and procurement. And that will show you the progress in terms of construction. And these are your ACIDI projects in terms of where they are located. Many of those projects are already complete. The two tables that I just presented are giving you the numbers, but this is just an indication of where those projects are located. That a lot of work has happened in the Eastern Cape, and KZN and Limpopo, but there is still a lot of work that still needs to be done to address the challenges that we have. Now, what I was showing was projects that are implemented nationally. Then you have projects that are implemented by provinces, by the different provinces, through what we call the education infrastructure grants. Only on sanitation projects, you have 1,557 in the current financial year. These are projects that are currently implemented in this financial year. 319 of those projects are at planning. 226 of those projects are at tender stage, and 659 have been completed as at the end. These figures are as at the end of September. So 659 have been completed to date. That is in the provincial program. Now, the program is implemented through this multi-pronged approach. As I indicated, the first set of projects are those that are implemented through ACIDI, as I indicated, and they are monitored by the DBE. Then the second part, the chair did mention that, in fact, on the 14th of August, there was a business breakfast that was hosted by the Honorable President of the country to launch this initiative. And the initiative, the business breakfast, the purpose of that breakfast was to mobilize the private sector to come into play and assist the department in terms of addressing this challenge. I will indicate how far are we in terms of the response from the private sector. And in that instance, we have what we call the National Education Collaboration Trust, which is an education DBE trust that works towards mobilizing funding from the private sector for different initiatives. So the NEC team is managing that part in terms of handling the business part of the program. And then the balance of the projects are implemented by promises that I indicated. Now, the target is that all the pit toilets and demolitions are to be addressed by the end of the 2019-20 financial year. However, we are prioritizing pit toilets. Currently, the work that we are doing is to look at what projects can be moved forward within the language recently is to be prioritized from existing budget. So what we are doing with provinces is to get provinces to reprioritize their programs and funding from, if where possible, move projects that were supposed to be implemented in the next and the outer year to be moved into the current financial year, where possible start planning, design, and all those processes so that where possible we can even start implementing them before the end of the financial year. So we are currently doing that process of reorganizing the funding to address these challenges, especially in the using the education infrastructure plan. The other issue is that what we have done is that all maintenance projects in the different programs, if a province, a school for instance, was identified for painting, we have indicated that provinces must include a sanitation component in all maintenance projects. So that is currently the way that is going on. So out of the 3,900 that I indicated in the slide, you will find that a school was earmarked for an additional classroom. So what we are saying is that the scope of that way must be changed such that the sanitation component is added to that. So all our maintenance programs would have a sanitation program, and we are busy consolidating that to see how many of the 3,900 are going to be included in that program. Address the issue of maintenance of sanitation in school. Now, providing sanitation facilities only is not enough. We have launched a maintenance program for sanitation in schools that is being launched, that is being implemented in all provinces to address specifically the issue of operation and maintenance. What we have been aware of for a long period is that we tend to provide facilities but we do not budget sufficiently for their maintenance. So what we have done, first of all, is that we have indicated, and that is being implemented with effect from this financial year, that a minimum of 20% of the education infrastructure grant is used for maintenance of schools, whether it's sanitation or the maintenance of schools in general. However, we have a separate program that we have introduced that addresses operation and maintenance and health and hygiene in schools. We are seeing progress, but it's not as sufficient as we want it to be. And the private sector is also coming in with companies like Unilever and so on coming in, and UNICEF coming in to work with us towards addressing the issue of operation and maintenance and health and hygiene in our sanitation facilities and schools. Right, I indicated that we are working with the specifically with the Water Research Commission in an assessment of technologies. They have been very, very helpful in assisting us in terms of selecting the types of technologies that we use. This is the template that we got from the Water Research Commission that we are using in terms of selecting appropriate sanitation technologies to implement in our schools. And this is the different types of technologies. This is not a comprehensive list. This is just to give the sum of the technologies that we have been guided by the Water Research Commission in terms of implementing your EcoSat, your EnviroLoop, Low Flash, and so on, biodigesters and so on. So many of these are already being implemented in some of our schools with guidance from the Water Research Commission, and we are seeing a lot of interest from our schools, especially because most of them can be deployed very quickly. The issue that we are dealing with is also just to make sure that there is proper work that is done to make sure that these are properly maintained going forward. And in terms of partnerships, I have to indicate that the uptake from the private sector was not as enthusiastic as we had hoped it would be, but every little thing that would get to assist us to address these big challenges, welcome. Today, we do have those funding partners that have come to the party, the Avbox, Lonmin, Eskom, Anglo-American, Sasol, and so on. That work is still continuing. We have a unit that is called Partnerships in the DBE that is working with the NECT that is still going and working with and approaching different corporate companies to come into the party, to come to the party rather. So this is just to say the progress that we have made, for instance, so far with Apple pledged 15 million. So far we have assessed 9 schools, and last week Apple approved that we go ahead with those 9 schools. We are still doing assessment with other schools. The Tirisano Corporation Development Tirisano Trust, which is from the Industrial Development Corporation, has pledged 30 million. We have assessed 950 schools, and we are in the process of going ahead to get contractors appointed, PSP rather appointed. Lonmin has pledged 15 million to do 15 schools in the Northwest, and this assessment are in progress as we speak. So Chair, this was just to give an indication of the progress that we have made with regards to addressing the sanitation challenge.
That helps. How do we deal with this report? We do not want to have you for longer here. Whether we allow the full report on budget relaxation program. I understand that we saw that these are not the same things. Maybe we just allow a discussion on the specific one. And again, the question shall arise or shall arise as to what has then been the role of your public department. I'm trying to think of a situation where public works has fulfilled a school. What goes through the plan? That today we have 6 billion odd having to be mobilized to deal with any specific issue related to sanitation. What could have been the situation at the time of planning? Okay, I guess it all starts at school. All the behaviors that we have about maintenance of our own sanitation facilities, where is that there at school? At that tender age of your grade R, as to how we treat our own sanitation, whether at home or public spaces. We do have this public space where the toilets are finalized. It seems as if you set it on. You can just talk about public works. Because all the members are fine, satisfied. Mr. Moon, some of the
thank you very much, President. Morning, colleagues. Morning, colleagues, and morning, listeners.
Morning.
In the assembly, as what we expect, then us to say and respond, similar to meetings. I want to welcome them. It's very strange what has been indicated in Chairperson.
He is a principal. In his own right.
Also, they are familiar with me. I'm also in the portfolio of education, basic education. They are wondering what am I going to shoot out. But the issue is on, we know what role that should be played by the Department of Basic Education in terms of sanitation in the school. But if we can be clearer on what do you expect Department of Water and Sanitation to play in how is one as now they have to provide bulk water supply. And what do you expect us to what role do you expect us to play so that you can be assisting in the situation? And hey, you know when they say a child has fallen and drowned in this toilet, as it has been happening around the bomb point. So hey, we feel so because we are part of sanitation. And the people down there do not differentiate their roles. They just know that anything that has to do with sanitation and what comes to the department into the Department of Water Sanitation. And they will ask you what role are you playing because there's this problem. When we go deeper, because we are multitasked as politicians, when you go deeper you find that no. The toilet that has been built does not fit the need. Does not fit the little ones. It's only for, it's meant for adults, you see. And then that one has just, you know, kids, they just play, they sing. I was a teacher. They just sing. Why they are singing, they just roll over. When this whole seat is very big, they will never roll over, it's not at any one time. Is there any way, or in the reprioritization, that you look at the provision of the smaller seats for smaller kids? The research commission indicated that they have got another way of they supply this dry sanitation. You know, most of the kids now, even if they are in rural areas, they want to use something like water. So, how far are you with the taking of that or implementation of that system in mostly the rural community? I think that's the question.
I'm running around like I said last time, I think last week. Is there any person you can sit next to us because I can do not run around?
No, that's I'm a bit impressed about the presentation. And I saw some few pictures here, which tell us that what we must expect in the ground. But my challenge is in terms of the specification. When these toilets are are built in the same specification for the different specification. Why I'm raising this, you find that in certain areas, toilets have been built. Some are half tiled, some they don't have tiles. Some they don't have ventilators. Some they do. So I just wanted to check in terms of specification. Is it really one specification? If it's not, why? The last thing that I wanted to ask is in terms of water. Because some of these toilets need water. But in certain areas, they are not connecting them to the system that is that the particular village is saving because of non-supply of water, maybe municipality. So what is it in the specification said in terms of water? Abstractive. I just wanted to check those few things there. Thank you.
I'm Paul. Welcome.
You want to share all these little things you are late in Kaluri community, then choose to be late.
Yes, it's not your money.
bayasinika yokusenzela hle ini baqasha ama-toilet amanzi but inkinga if la emakhaya lingekho leli fayini asikasebenzisa lutho mina-ke bengithi nje ngiyajabula hlalo sami noma sekuleti ngisaphile masisakwazi ukuthi-ke ungene laley'ngane ngoba ibuhlungu inhliziyo ma uhambe ukuthi uye emakhaya uyobona ngahlala uzokhumbula hlalo ngilale ongasadi besiyenza ukugcina nje la sithole khona iy'ngane ukuthi ama-toilet azo ayikho right even i-toilet time uthole iy'ngane ukuthi zithapha amaphepha ama-chiefs zizwe-chidabe ngawo and leyanto ibuhlungu ngendlela ongayazi mina bengicela ukuthi into ey'ningi la singazenzi le nto yixoxa senza ama-theory eke sezibona izenzeka ngiyabonga sihlalo sami uzonaba nangomakhelwane wami eculeni.
Thank you, Chairperson. I refer to the report provided by the honourable member on his pack. Thank you, Chairperson, and I apologize for late coming, but I'm happy that you are dealing with schools today. Concerning the issue of schools, the toilets and water are critical needs of in a school. For example, there is a school called in Tandeni or in Tandeni area that has a problem. The toilets are filthy, there is no water, and you also find that they are too far from the school building. On top of that, they are full of waste and there are no toilet papers inside. This is found in black schools mostly. What surprises me most is that kids of the teachers teaching in black schools are in private schools in white urban areas. The former minister once responded that schools are provided with a budget for infrastructure, but the main pipes are not available to upgrade the infrastructure itself. Thank you very much.
Mine are three only, in addition. Whether the borehole shouldn't only be confined to rural areas, having to explore boreholes in other schools, even in urban areas. Number two, as you go towards the access, on your right, there's a complex called Banado. And as you join Brett or Northwest, there's a farm school on the right. They've got about 400 odd learners there. They have a septic tank and also a facility, a little plant that gets hot water for reuse. And they've got a little garden there, and they've been winning awards out of that garden. So reuse of water, that's the point I'm trying to raise, becomes very important. We're supposed to be examples, we're supposed to be leading as Parliament, reusing water in that institution. The department is supposed to be an example also. In all these buildings, the department is supposed to be reusing water. Whether the department is doing that or not, that's something else. On the implementing agents, I see it was 3.6%, which is basically, I guess, IOT, so management fees or implementing, whatever we call it. This very same department has got what is called a construction unit. In the absence of the public works program, whether public works is playing a role or not, the department has got staff complement of no less than 2,900 staff members as part of what is called construction unit. So that we really try and get money circulating around government. If we can, it should also be part of capacity building on the part of government. Especially in the form of your Department of Global Infantry. Once again, Department officials, the Minister, the issue of the Northern Canal comes up. Basic education, they've got norms and standards. would really greatly appreciate if we can get a copy of that, so that we try and compare what the department has. Understand it is so that here you're dealing with schools, and the department shall be dealing with individual households. Obviously, there shall be differences, but the essence shall equally be the same, I would imagine, in terms of cost. Understandably so that also you're going to be having in this school, for example, one school could be having some like 500, other schools 1,000. But also it would be important to get a sense as to the cost of those, depending of course. You might wish to enlighten us. Thank you. Can you pass the mic to the deputy, sir?
Yes. Thank you very much. I wasn't sure because I'm also coming. I'm not supposed to be asking questions, but mine is not a question. I would like to welcome the presentation. It is very informative, I must say. But I would like to make a request to have a letter to them, giving them details. There's a school in Tipton called Philip Mutwango. We visited when the people were given instructions by the president that each of us should choose the school after the incident of the child who was found in school. So I chose that one because I'm coming from there and I know that the situation there is bad. The heart rate is very high and just that they need help. And I would like to request, because one of the things that came up from the teachers, they are helping themselves in the bushes. Even now, I know because it's my area. So I would like, if, because the person responsible is in Kachava. And I'll send all the details here so that we can check what's going on in that school. Thank you very much.
Thank you. One more question.
Thank you, Chair. The first question that the Chair raised around the role of the Department of Public Works in the program. The Department of Public Works is one of our implementing agents in all provinces, even in the ASIC program, the Department Public Works is our implementing agent. So how we implement the program is that the Department of Basic Education will do the identification of projects and draft what we call the user hazard management plan and submit that to the Department of Public Works for Public Works to do the implementation on our behalf. But in many instances, you find that the Department of Public Works might not have sufficient capacity to execute the magnitude of your program. That is where we go to other implementing agents like your TBSA, your Polar Trust, and other implementing agents. But in many instances, Department of Public Works becomes our preferred implementing agent, and we're working with that department. But I have to be very upfront that capacity issues in the Department of Public Works sometimes develop that relationship. That is why we are leading towards using more and more implementing agents. The Department of Water and Sanitation, Honorable Kuni, and the role that they have to, what is the role that we expect from the Department of Water and Sanitation? As I indicated in my presentation, first of all, the Department of Water and Sanitation is our advisor in terms of technology. We cannot and we will never claim that we are experts in the provision of sanitation. We might be built environment specialists, but our common is education. So when it comes to the provision of sanitation, the Department of Water and Sanitation becomes our technical advisor, and that is why we have the department Water and Special Commission as our key partner, and we also are working with official of the Department of Water and Sanitation in this regard. We are having meetings on a regular basis with them. What we are doing specifically with regard to this program is that letters have just gone out through the signature of the minister. We have instituted a steering committee for the sanitation program, and the Department of Water and Sanitation has been invited to provide a personal people or resources that will serve in that committee that will look at the implementation of the program advice, get reports on progress, and so on. So that is the role that the Department of Water and Sanitation is in. In terms of whether the what we are providing suits the purpose, in the presentation I did indicate that one of the issues that we are addressing is to ensure that we provide sanitation facilities that are fit the purpose of purpose for our learners. But I specifically refer to your grade R learners and your primary school learners from grade 1 to grade 4, as well as learners with disabilities. So in all the facilities that we are providing, and we've got standard designs that are aligned with our Northern standards that guide in terms of the provision of those particular facilities. And it goes on to address the questions that were put about specification. In terms of specifications, we have your standard designs that are informed by the Northern standards, and remember our Northern standards are informed by the specifications that we receive from the Department of Water and Sanitation. However, in the provision of a superstructure, that will depend on the different types of technologies that we use. In some instances, if you use brick and mortar, the specifications would be standard. But if you use alternative technology, then the specifications would be slightly different. So it depends on the type of material that you use. So it will differ when you go and do your bills of quantity, depending on the type of material and the technology types that we have selected for that particular project. The I indicated that the Honorable Good in the Water Research Commission, the use of the poor flush, or what we refer to as low flush, we started about 3-4 years ago in Kofimbaba on the project that we worked with the Department of Science and Technology and the CSIR, where we piloted the poor flush technology with the Water Research Commission. After that, we are rolling it out even in this program, we are using that technology. The technology that used about 2 liters to flush into a toilet, so it's very amenable for use in your local areas. So that is the one that we are rolling. Our first port of call is that the school must be provided with a flush toilet. But where there is no sewer circulation and water, you cannot provide a flush toilet. Then low flush becomes your second option. Where you cannot, in some instances, you still find that in some villages you still have a problem of provision of water. Where you cannot provide that, then the third option would be your VIP toilet. So that is the gradation which we use in terms of which technology do we provide. And I think this addresses the issue of water connection and where you do not have reliable water. If you look at the pictures that we have provided here, in all where you provide poor flush and where we are providing VIP, we also provide rainwater tanks for hand washing and so on. So it would depend on the availability of water. Unfortunately, we have been disappointed in some municipalities, for instance, where we make requests that those rainwater tanks be provided with water by municipalities, but the service is not as reliable as we would want it to be. And with the recent drought, you would expect that those tanks would be filled naturally when it rains, but unfortunately, it does not happen. So it's work in progress. We've had a number of engagements with the Department of Cooperative Governance and also with SALCA, specifically with the municipality. wanted to come to the party and addressing this particular issue. We have noted the entire day in school. We will follow it up and with the relevant province and ourselves. And go and investigate and see how we can interview them. The issue of distance from facilities from schools, that is a historical thing. Now, what was happening previously is that your pit toilet is an ordinary pit on the ground where the feces go down into the hole, and because your ordinary pit toilet does not address the issue of smell. In order to ensure that smell does not affect the learner in a classroom, you had to locate the facilities further away from the school. But with the new technologies, there is no longer need for that. Because if you look at the VIP toilet, you've got that mechanism that deals with the smell and then pour flushes for water down and it takes down the thesis into the sunk away facility. So that was a historical issue, and in the current provision that we are making, that is no longer an issue. And we are aware that the distance of the toilet from the school, from the classroom, also has got some security challenges for our learners and bullying and all those kinds of issues. So we have already picked up those issues, and in our current provision, we are dealing with those kinds of. The use of toilet paper for us in infrastructure is a nightmare. Because in some of the issues of maintenance that we have to deal with on the daily basis, even in flush toilets, you provide a toilet, you find stones, you find very foreign objects inside our toilets. Our learners need a lot of. So we have a program with Unilever and UNICEF that is working towards the behavioral aspects of the use of sanitation facilities. And what we have included, in fact, in all the programs that I have mentioned here, we have a component called user education. That when a facility is provided, at the end of the program, in primary schools, it takes the form of a play kind of a thing where we educate our learners in terms of the proper use of facilities, but at the same time, we educate our educators in terms of inculcating those behavioral aspects into their day-to-day subject offerings. So it's work in progress as well. A difficult one around why are boreholes confined to rural areas, communal and non-urban areas? I guess the diplomatic, in the absence of a proper answer, the diplomatic one would be to say, and it's not a diplomatic, the correct answer is to say, look, we've got in your urban areas, you've got availability of water, and in an urban area you simply connect to the network, and if it's not available, it's something that can be addressed with your municipality. But in your rural area, we sink a borehole because that is the only source of water, and it is also a challenge for us because in many instances, because of the drought, we sink a borehole. When you get the water, after some time, the water table drops, the borehole runs dry, you no longer have water. In some instances, you have to sink three or four holes before you hit an aquifer, which comes at a cost as well. And it's also a big challenge. But yes, that is the reality of the situation, that in an urban area for now, we are saying, yes, there is provision. Let us concentrate in our deep areas where the biggest of our challenges are. And yes, the reuse of water. I did mention, Chair, that we are using your insight on slides that talks about assessment of technology. there is a technology that we refer to as biofilm wastewater technology, biodigester. The program that I mentioned with the Department of Science and Technology, Water Sanitation and the BSIR, we tested a few of those in Tobimbaba area in the Eastern Cape, and we are rolling them out in a few of our schools. The disadvantage of these is that they don't come cheap, and we are trying to make sure that the land stretches as far as possible. But we are trying different, because for instance, if you look at Asamblee in Kofimbaba, we are using the energy that is generated from that to for cooking for your school nutrition program. So we generate energy through what comes from the from the building, and that energy is used to feed into the school nutrition program, and the other is used also for your gardens, and then that produce also feed back into the school nutrition program. So these are things that we are already doing. The use of the construction unit in the Department of Water and Sanitation is something that we will explore with our colleagues and see if we haven't gone back with them. Thanks for that information. We will pursue it and see if it's something that we can factor into our program. Okay, I think I've addressed that. We will provide a copy of the nonsense cluster. The cost of providing toilets, Honorable Gwyn, I think that is another issue perhaps that we could say the Department of Water and Sanitation could play a role in terms of driving the cost down. Through the Section 100 program, we are intimately involved in the sanitation program in the Northwest. And when going through that program, It came as a surprise that in some programs you have a toilet seat chair that is coming at around 50,000 to 60,000, which is extremely expensive. And we are working on finding what is the cause of that. And we did a comparative analysis. Northern Cape and Northwest tend to come the highest in terms of the cost of the toilet. That is when that we are currently doing to find out what that is, the reasons behind that. But the other thing is that you find that the costs differ from province to province. Other issues might be your normal market forces issues, your distance from raw material, your distance from and so on. But you don't expect the difference to be that significant, and it's when that we are currently doing to just to find out what might, especially in the Northwest and Northern Cape. Northern Cape for us it was a little bit understandable. If you go all the way to Springbok, it might be understandable that you have to travel distances to deliver material there. But Kimberley you would expect the areas you would expect that. So it's when the progress to especially within the Northwest, since we are implementing on their behalf. On the ACD program, our toilet seat comes at around 44,000 to 45,000 per toilet seat. But the toilet seat is rather not bad, but you find differences in the provincial. I hope that Deputy Minister will help us here the moment and we will.
Thank you for that feedback. I think that system going forward as well, especially when we deal with the department, it also might just be very important that my mind is already ahead in terms of thinking of what could be happening elsewhere when it comes to these norms and standards and the cost associated with such. My mind is ahead already. I'm thinking here where even we're going to have other departments that are also involved with their own budget in building toilets, put it in those cool terms. Whether your clinics, for instance, obviously they use their own norms and standards. They have their own costs associated with that. Whether it would be prudent on the department to pull together themselves and have one norms and standards set, you know, for your department when it comes to construction of toilets. You know, this thing of having one department having its own costs and its own norms and standards, another department, it really doesn't sustain. At best, that's where unscrupulous your business persons come in and make the bulk out of any gaps that exist within government departments. That's just one thing that comes to mind. I think it was a straightforward submission, and the issue was very straightforward, being addressed and responded to. And we still have three other submissions that must come before us. And I can also safely say that out of this submission, we should naturally be taking ourselves straight into a session that deals with budget eradication program, which I would imagine the rest of other questions that you might wish to have might be addressed. There was an old man called Albert Luthuli. Obviously those days most meetings would have been attended to by men. He would say, even if you did not say a word, you shall still be a man. You remain a man. You instructed the Mount Kaula to come in. If you can also straight to the point, we try to avoid the situation where we are here. We have a budget statement coming through as well that we must all work for.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. Ngiyabonga impendulo ekhulunywa amahlonishwa namaphansi kuhlala. Into ebengithi ngizoyisho nje ngiyavumelana nabo ukuthi kuyenzeka amarekhodi amathanki. But amathanki bavele bathathe basuke bawabeke. La manje lisho ukuthi kufanele agcwaliswe abawenzi. Kufanele manje lenye into ey'koleni oyithola lapha kuthola ukuthi iy'ngane yizona ofuna zikline lama-toilet. Lezi ngane ukuthi uyayibheka azinawo ngisho amaglasi. Yabona le nto akhuluma ngayo angilenomuntu okhuluma wama-USA. Lento ibuhlungu ngoba ma uthi uthi uyayibheka yenzeka ey'koleni zethu. Ngimbongo la u-check-a imfino wethu ebala namaklinikhi la sikhuluma khona ukuthi isemtholampilo. Uthole ukuthi kwawona amaklinikhi nawo anga-very same thing, angasikhuluma ngokuhlanzeka, angasazi khona la ikliniki ma uthi uyetholethi lakhona lizomehluko. And bese kwenzeka lento engingasho ukuthi ngithe nga-agensi na konke engiyibuza kuyenzeka kanjani. Uthole ukuthi unesi nodokotela noma uthisha, uthisha omkhulu banama-toilet ahlukile. Umbuzo wami-ke uthi u-Public Works yena qobo and such yini umsebenzi wakhe, waye ngalandeli ukubheka ukuthi lezi zakhiwo zakhe ziyakwazi ukwenza izinto ey'fanele lezi ofanele zizenze. Ngiyavuka kulokhu kwama-toilet. U-Deputy Minister usephumile last week la. Oh, when I can, 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 when ney'ngane zidifuna ukufundiswa ukuze zingalayishi yonke into. Mina bengiqonde ukuthi instead of zichidane ngephepha ngokho emakhaya newspaper ofunda base bagcina sebethatha amaphepha ama-chief ma ungena nje lana kugcwelile yonke indawo nani kodwa jobs ezisayibekile and into esihlukumeza kakhulu la nomasipala ingakho bengithi uhlalo umenist ukhona la bekufunela naye kwi-last week ngakhuluma nesitamukoko esivuliwe esilayishwa yonke into namanje lesi sitamukoko sisabambane nomasipala lubezenkinga no-unilever ngiyayithanda into eyishoyokufundisa umphakathi but kungcono u-unilever uzoqoka umphakathi awuqeqeshe anikeze wona ama-chemicals langoba banawusho ama-chemicals emakhaya aqole umphakathi leyo mali nalelo lwazi alinike kona kube umphakathi nawo uzofunda ukuthi kufanele wenze
njani mhlawumbi ezinye izinto sizothi sizibuze sizofuna i-department kuba la bangabe education kuphela ama-clinics nomasipala i-department
Chairperson, thanks for the response. By far, my wallet name was just they installed water tanks and leave them without water. They don't even provide the airspace to suppress the threat smell. Learners are also forced to clean these toilets without using glass, which is very dangerous to them. But thanks to the Chairperson for touching the issue of clinics, where you also find that nurses, doctors, teachers and principals, they themselves have better or good looking toilets than the staff or the learners in school. And the Department of Works doesn't make a follow-up of what is happening in schools. Why are they not making a follow-up? Kids don't use toilets, they even use the papers for the chips to clean themselves after relieving themselves. Drains are full and not taken care of. Communities should be educated so that they are able to educate their kids at home as to how to use the toilet. Thank you.
Dr. Cabin, straight to the point.
Chair, let me propose that we request them again to come, let them come again, so that we dwell much on this point. Because the answer raises a lot of eyebrows to me. That's why I propose that we
Okay, thank you. You shall be invited. You want to respond very briefly on the issues raised by my colleague?
Yes, thank you very much. We welcome the input. Perhaps one would have expatiated a little bit more on, for instance, starting with the Unilever program. What we are doing is that it's a kind of a train-the-trainer kind of a program where, as I said, we are dealing with behavioral issues around how to ensure that we keep our toilets clean, what is the role of the educators, what is the role of the learners, and what is it that you need to do in terms of keeping the toilet clean and the issues around health and hygiene and use of gloves when cleaning toilets and all that. So those are part of the bigger program that we are dealing with Unilever. So I think that answers it.
Okay. It's work in progress. It can only be time that can be against us. We, as members of parliament, given an opportunity, we can be with you 1 hour, 2 hours. We always have something to ask and say. We have opinions, no doubt. Thank you once again for the prognosis response and also for the input that enlightened us. It does also assist us, especially as we move forward with the issues that was still to deal with from the department in dealing with the budget eradication program. Again, that's your role is, wherein children go out there in the open field together with the adults. So it's a challenge, it's a real challenge. So that kind of collaboration should always be encouraged. Partnerships between government and government. And once again, thank you. It's up to you to remain if you wish to listen to this session, which is not far fetched from what you are dealing with. It's up to you equally if you have to rush off for somewhere else. Deputy Minister and your team, the floor is yours. Shall we then almost immediately begin? Excellency, you can pass the mic to the Deputy Minister. Shall we then deal with the frustration to the public frustration court? And then we have the green drop and blue drop report. And finally, the last month, which all of those are reports.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members and officials from Water and Sanitation. Chair, in the interest of time, we have three areas to present: Water and Sanitation Program, Blue and Green Drop Report, and Accident Change. I would like to move time for the Chair. And I'm black. I know that the second is that I know that we all know we have no new official just to save time. I'm going to request the Deputy Chief to say something and also give the word to the Deputy Chief.
Thank you, Gian. We will ask Mr. Nonato Mano to give the presentation. But I need to introduce Professor that he is newly appointed to act as the Deputy Director of the Council of Climate and the Chief Director responsible for market eradication program is not here because he is at his because he's attending it, you know, he's attending it now home. And maybe that is why it's very difficult for us to respond to the decision. So, I'm sorry, I'm very much because it puts him under a lot of pressure in the kitchen. I'm really appointed to that, and it's what the Chief Director is going to do. Over to you, Mr.
Jefferson, if we start off on that note where the department indicates that they've got no, I don't know where the minister.
Jefferson, if we start off this presentation where we already get a sense that they won't be able to ask difficult questions on this, why don't we go ahead with this? Presentation. They should come here prepared. They should tell us that they cannot answer our questions. They ask for postponement on this matter. But you know, we have a lot of time, Chairperson, to hear dying out. And this is unacceptable that the department come unprepared here to answer questions to the Board of Directors.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will concur with the previous speaker, really, because especially with this bucket eradication program, it has been coming for many years. You would want to interrogate as to when this issue will come to an end, because really the dignity of our people when it comes to this issue of vocational education. So we want to have sufficient answers as to what is happening with this program. So the department is unprepared, not well prepared to come and answer some of our questions. It raises some real issues. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, it's quite an answer of motivation, I must mention. We've been dealing with this matter for quite some time. I'm not sure what is entailed in the response from the acting DG when she says, almost ahead of any budget submission. There is an excuse. By implication that says there are not too much. That's what the acting DG is saying in a nutshell. The submission is here, it's ready, but let us not expect too much. And that's what they're saying in a nutshell. So that's what I'm reading. Did I read it wrong?
Well,
that's also okay, let's allow Dr. Duncan.
I think for a while, I don't know if I understand. I understand their concern. But in this case, we are having the acting DG. And then I believe that is a final arbiter in the department. And then it's a carrier of whatever outcome that may come into this meeting. Whether difficult answers or questions, is there to be taking those questions as a final arbiter in the department. Therefore, I suggest that let's continue with the presentation. Let's hear what is in the presentation. So at the end of the day, all of what we are going to be asking here, we give it to the acting DG so that he is able to run around with a mandate from this committee. Thank you.
I don't want us to waste time. If the acting DG is saying so-and-so is not here, but there is somebody else who's going to come, and that person is new, all what that means to me, from where I'm sitting here, let us not expect much. Yes, there is going to be everything submitted, but when it comes to engagements of the submission, there we are going to be found wanting. So that's what I'm reading. Let us not waste much time on this. Let us simply just tell ourselves that the department must come prepared in the next week when we have this subject. Let us just be as blunt as such and be able to say whatever I have to deal with must come whatever that person is doing or wherever that person is. We have until this coming week for that person to come before us who has been dealing with issues. Because we really need to get this issue sorted once and for all. We have here at the department at one point saying, I think it was 2 years ago, budget eradication shall be done away with by end of March the other day. And we even had to push the department in support of their own time and program and whatever, in saying, March might just not be true
okay for you, push it further to June. So that's not fair. That was 2 years ago. We're still at that point now. Let us allow this department to come prepared to us, and without having to waste more time next week. I will find that, let me plead with you all that we allow this department to come so that we don't waste time and be all over on the same issues where we are not sufficiently responded to. So that's what I was really urgent to do. As I said again, I repeat without having to waste much of the time that we don't have. I can imagine if we start with this program on budget allocation, I can assure you that we can and we shall only do it only one with this one report. Because of the gravity of the issues I've been dealing with. We've just been on an oversight for this in a first stage. The numbers we are to be told here that are still outstanding, you shall have to weigh those numbers against what we saw there in Clockland. Whether in Clockland we are moving anywhere forward, you have another company there that is doing some work. They are doing their own thing. Now, these are the kind of details we really would wish to get involved into. When I see members nodding, I take it that we are fine. We are okay.
Chair?
Yes. Thank you very much. Let us, without waste of time, then move straight to the blue prop and green prop report.
Not a new matter. It has served before the committee in the past, and when I read the chairperson's invitation letter, the item is put there, submission of the blue and green government reports. I think the main issue for the chair and for the honourable members is the release of the reports. How do the department proceed to release the report once we have? But I will go through the presentation very quickly, and then if there's focus on the process of the release of the report, and then take questions, and then the other third the submission is the asset mine drainage. Today I'm supported by the team on the blue drop and green drop reports. It's a Nelerato Mukwena, who is the chief director for water services regulator. He's just raise your hand, yeah. And Mr. Marius Kiet, who's the chief director for asset mine drainage. Now, the slide shows what the background, criteria for assessments, the process to release the reports, what has been done since 2014, the trend analysis for this, some challenges and recommendations. So, Chair, you know that the Blue and Green Drop Certification Program is an incentive risk-based regulatory program initiated in 2008 by means, for us to identify and improve performance of the Water Services Authority in water and waste management. What it seeks to also do is to amalgamate the legal requirements and best practices within the domain of drinking water, quality management, and wastewater service towards sustainability. Also, the focus and implementation of risk management through identification of critical and high-risk areas, including implementation of corrective measures, which is called the Blue Drop Risk Rating, EDRR, and the Green Drop Risk Rating, GDRR. So the BDRR serves as a precautionary tool for water services authorities within municipalities to implement strategic and operational decisions to improve service delivery or mitigate identified risks. The BDRR focuses on water safety plan, the very critical issue, technical skills, and drinking water quality. It should not be confused with the actual blue drop status. And we only get to the status after we've done either a full assessment or process. But without this BDRR, we cannot achieve without this blue drop status, we cannot achieve the requirements. The green drop risk rating is also a precautionary tool for water service authorities to implement strategic and operational decisions to also improve service delivery. The green drop, the GDRR focuses on the wastewater risk assessment, planning, design, capacity versus operational flow, technical skills, and effluent. And then I say the same thing, that you should not be confused with the status report, because we have to do the GDRR. Now, when we do this, it is quite an extensive process of doing either a full assessment or a partial assessment. And then I put here on the slide what are some of the criteria that we use for the full assessment. So the wastewater risk abatement plan, the technical skills, the operations, maintenance, monitoring, the effluent compliance, solid sludge handling, management accountability, and local regulation asset management. Then on the partial assessment, we do a waste risk abatement planning, technical skills, operation maintenance, effluent compliance, and design. You see that the partial assessment is fewer criteria. The blue drop assessment criteria is the same I'm not going to go through the entire thing, except to say that the focus there is on the drinking water quality compliance and the full stand 241. Now the process to release the report is that you do the Water Service Authority's assessment, and you have a confirmation session of the assessment with the Water Service Authority. You moderate the scorecard, you compile the Water Service Authority or provincial and national reports, you conduct quality assurance, and then you submit for approval. The submission for approval is that the report is submitted to the minister. In 2013, the then minister, the late minister, now Leo, took the decision that in line with the executive authority, that the reports would be taken through to cabinet, for cabinet to consider those reports, and then cabinet to pronounce on them, and then to release the reports in once that process. Now, what has been done since 2014? In 2014, we did the Blue Drop Progress Assessment Report. It was finalized. Then the monitoring of non-compliant systems, and that's in our annual report under the PPI. The 2016 Blue Drop Progress Assessment was completed, and the report is undergoing quality assurance. Integration of the blue and green drop system is a new development in the department, is the integration of the blue and green drop systems to our information system called IRIS. IRIS is not the name of the person. It is an integrated regulatory information system which falls under the DDG of planning. Now this migration to IRIS in October 2017-18 is what we're looking at. 2016-17 reports, the partial assessment initiated in the 2017-18 is what we are looking at. Chair, so you'll see that it seems like we are playing like catch up in terms of these reports, but the issue is that these reports have to go through an extensive process, and when we do have financial capacity and resources, then we will do the full assessment, and we'll choose, or we can decide which is a greater risk. And then when we do not have that financial resources and capacity, then we will do what is called a partial assessment. So it's not like the colleagues, the team that deals with it is not doing anything. But historically, we have used the services of PSPs or consultants to do this work, and it's quite a comprehensive work, and it's quite expensive for us to do. Then this slide just shows a trend analysis from 2012 to 2016. This is the percentage of systems in low risk categories have steadily increased from 2012 to 2014. Followed by a slight increase in 2016. The opposite is noted for high and critical risk categories, which have decreased from 2012 to 2014, and then increased in 2015. And the percentage of high risk categories have decreased between 2015 and 2016, while critical risk categories have continued to increase in 2016, which now account for 11.6 of all systems. The observed increase in systems under critical risk is due to, amongst others, the lack of sufficient data, insufficient monitoring by the Water Service Authority, the issue of the aging infrastructure, including vandalism, theft, etc., and lack of operations and maintenance that have been done. The lack of implementation of risk management plans for water safety plans. And this is there on the doorstep of the municipality. But in general, the challenge that we do have is limited technical expertise within the department. We are addressing that. The Deputy Minister is aware that there's a list of engineers, technicians, etc. was provided, and now we have to go through the exercise of placing these people appropriately where they can render these services, and also the issue of the financial support. So, Chair, I think that's in a nutshell a high-level presentation of this process and the submission of the reports. I think I will stop there in the interest of time, and then I'll hand back to you, Chair. Thank you very much. I'm not sure.
But does it inform the members that students that we give in Bursaries by the department? And our thing must lend to those students, because amongst them, I know that Chen has hydraulic engineers, and they came to me to report that they're not being utilized, and they're young. And I requested the department to make sure that the monumental buildings, our construction unit, requesting them to utilize them. That's why I said we might have expected with the department, but they're not utilized. Next time we come here, we'll give a report on that issue, because they belong to the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. And what do we do now?
Chairperson, so the way forward is for the formal submission to be made to our minister. With the reports or summary of the reports to be submitted to cabinet for cabinet consideration, and cabinet will debate the issues there, and then there will be probably a direction that the department must release the reports into the public.
I'm battling. In my own mission. Yes. Last time you submitted the report in 2014. Thereabout. The requirement tells us that these are supposed to be annual reports. There hasn't been any such report or such report submitted. Thus today we have the situation we are in terms of the quality of our water and also the functionality or lack thereof of our infrastructure, especially the wastewater treatment plant, which are supposed to be producing a treated quality type of water. Now these reports are not there, 2015, 2017, you are now 2018. Obviously a report for this 2019 will not be saying anything about the past. The report was they are not there. Granted, the water quality is in the state in which it is currently. Now, this raises a question about the capacity to procure such. I hear your point raised about having to absorb this for our service providers. That's the challenge we are in, and I guess the reason why we requested this program for today, you know, precisely for that reason as to whether you are able to produce those reports. I mean, you do have such capacity.
And most importantly, what happens going forward? Okay, now Mr. Kassam, I see your hand.
Chairperson, yes, the last report was done in 2013. The report shows the 2014 report, which eventually, Chairperson, I had to bring a FIRE application to get those reports released in 2015. The mere fact is, Chairperson, that the answers from the department is just not good enough. The Minister is the custodian of water, he must protect the water resources. It's not happening at the moment. If you look at the report, Chairperson, you see that just on the blue drop or on drinking water, there was a decline according to the department, which they now released this information because it still needs to be verified. I would have liked to see your trend analysis on your green bill, because in your previous 2014 report, 82% of the wastewater treatment plants in this country were in critical risk, high risk or medium risk, with only 16% that's in low risk. Now I can imagine you didn't want to bring that trends you've got here on drinking water, you don't want to bring the green drop or your wastewater trends, because most probably that would look even worse than this is looking. Chairperson, the bottom line is that, and we discussed this last week or the week before last week, where the Water Research Commission indicated there are other means of monitoring water. I don't accept what we get today, that it's going to cabinet. What does it help us to take a 2016 report to cabinet? What happens between 2016 and now? The situation is even worse. Now, Chairperson, I just want to give you an idea. In Randfontein, I was there on Monday. In the 2014 report, that plant was lying in medium risk. Now, Chair, if I tell you that plant is not working at all, the water that comes in, it doesn't even go through the grids. It flows directly in the Tweede Spruit River that goes right to the Hartbeespoort Dam, Tweede Loop River. There's no chlorine added. The plants, I took photos of those plants. Now, if that was in medium risk, it now will be in critical risk. That's one plant. You can go to many of them. This department got no idea what the status is of our rivers. They've got no idea what is the status of wastewater treatment plants in this country. And they must take the full responsibility for this. Nobody else. It's their task to make sure there's no pollution in our rivers, and municipalities are looking after wastewater treatment plants. Now, Chair, if they're not going to do anything, municipalities will not spend money there because there's no consequences. And how do you manage that? How do you make sure municipalities are adhering to the standard of water that must go into our rivers? If this department is not monitoring it, they really don't know, Chairperson. Information given to us here does not show to me that this department knows what the quality of our water is in the country. And that's very dangerous. People must reuse it. Chair, how many times did we say, and we can use that example for many and many municipalities, we want to release bad water or high-risk water into our system, the next municipality, the people staying there, the ratepayers, must pay a hell of a lot of money to clean the sewer water that this department is allowing municipalities to put into our system.
So, Chair, I really don't know. You know, we've discussed this so many times. This, every time the excuse of the minister, and the minister must do this, it's not the minister, it's the department. Don't put the blame on someone else if you don't do your job. Give it to someone that can do the job, and let's make sure that our water quality is in an excellent state. And then, that's the important thing. They say the next war in the world will be around water. Why? Because we are damaging our water resources, we're not looking after our water resources, and then we say, we wait for cabinet or we wait for the minister. The minister, if you don't produce a document, if you don't produce a report, what do you want the minister to do about it? Because ultimately the minister is responsible. But don't pass the buck. Why are the departments not looking after this? And Chair, you were 100% correct. We've heard this last year, the previous year, and the year before that. We are busy. Last year they didn't have money. The previous year they said, we didn't have budget. But Chair, that is, we can't accept any longer the response we get from this department on the quality of our water. And we need them to make criminal charges against officials of the department, because the Act says you may lay criminal charges, but if they don't police the water, how do we expect municipalities will look after this if there's no consequences? I'm sorry, Chairperson, but this is unacceptable.
Mr. Mbun.
This issue of passing the buck, if we don't do our way with it, we are going to have serious challenges.
Isn't it that you who have been telling us that by 2030 we are going to have a problem with water? It's you who told us. But the question is, what are you doing about the same resource that you have? I know that it's a lack of implementation, lack of risk management plan. And then you said by municipalities. And who is in charge of water? That's the question. Who is in charge of the water? The last time, I think it was in January, not February, when we visited Mpumalanga, we could see with our naked eyes the raw water from serious stages downstream here. People are thinking about aging infrastructure. You know, when you say every time aging infrastructure, anything, who made it to age if you did not maintain it yourself? But the question, the million dollar question is, if any person can ask a departmental official, can you tell us about the status of water in our country? Just mentioning rivers, major rivers, Val Dam, and then you speak about the scale, what is the scale around Gauteng. If they ask you, what is the status of that river? If you can't give the answer, that means you are not working for that department. You don't know exactly what's happening in the department. As a departmental senior official or senior officials, what does it say to you if you don't get a report, an annual report, from your own regional sectors about the status of water? What does it say to you? How do you help us all, South Africans, to ensure by 2030 we don't encounter the problem of water shortage? Almost 4, 5 years, do not have the report. See, the smaller one, if we had power, I don't know what that is, but like, we know if we had power. You know, I don't know much about water, but I believe that when I go to the chef, I can tell you that this water is dirty and not eating.
and report to the municipality, they will tell me that they did not add 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What about you who deals with the water on a daily basis? Who's supposed to check? Because it's just a generic statement to say municipalities do risk management plans. Which are those municipalities? You don't know. You will be general. It will be best if you come here and say, no, the valve dam from the source to here, it's clean. Because the valve dam has got the water, clean water, right from the source. Who did it? It's us here. It's us who did it. It's clean from the source. But from which part of South Africa, which part of the valve dam does it start to be contaminated? You have to indicate that it starts here. This is the quality. The quality starts to be derailed, to have a problem right from here. You understand? Then this is what we are doing to counteract those that problem. You understand? You don't pass the bar. You don't pass the bar. You see? So these are the things that we should be able to department of office. What is our work? What is our work effect? If we just sit there and you come here and try like us. Oh, my daughter, my new mama, oh, my new mama, you must improve, man.
Exactly the point raised by the very last point. And the minister that says, Mahamola, Mahana. Sorry, not Mahola, Bahola. Directly interpreted, the officials have a free ride and get paid for doing nothing. That's the essence of what Mr. Mbuni is saying. January last year, on the Blue Drop report, the department promised that by end of October last year, that report shall be ready. And that report is not here. It's a year later. It was also reported last year in January that the vacancies that are there shall be dealt with. We are still raising the same issue about capacity. So in a nutshell, what the department is doing is illegal. So they talk directly again to the quality of our water source. It is there in your statement, vision and mission, that talks about protection of water resource. But what is happening as we speak now, that is not happening. Water Research Commission went at length talking to us about innovations that they have. And we asked them directly whether they can work or they do work with the department in producing such quality water, water in our country. It's a capacity that is within reach. So that's what we are dealing with here. Mr. Mbuni summarized it so well, saying the division dealing with this matter, that is regulation and compliance, there has been so much activity going on in that division, you get lost in the process. You know, this function is here today, the other day, somewhere else, and there's confusion. Confusion teaching. functioned all over the world within that division. You know that. You go get your international person dealing with the regulation of your water board. But that's the by the way. The issue that we're dealing with here now, capacity is not there. Where you have a little bit of that capacity, nothing is happening. The promises last year in January is a year later. It's going to another year in another January. So January of this year, gone. We're going for the second January, in other words, for the second year. How do you move forward with this one? Dr. Kalini noted, Ketana noted, Mr. Pason noted.
What can I say? Well, it's the one in Twitter. The last one in Twitter. I think we need to put more pressure. I don't know in which step. It was in as far as I'm concerned. I was not in a position to listen to a report that Kalini is far from 2012. It's really worrisome. Because we need to report the current product of Tigia. Exactly what is it that is happening in terms of our care in the country. But today we are getting a report assuming the evidence that we are being blindfolded by the report. So I think as a committee we must say we need a report as soon as tomorrow. So that we can exactly what is it that is happening in as far as water is concerned. Because this is really the high risk. And as a community, we are not sure as to what is it that we are going to tell our people about.
About the previous 2012, 2013, although now we are on 2018. And then this thing for talking about Minister Molewa for previously, she's not there now to come and account for us for this thing. But really, we are not going to do this.
Chairperson, I want to make a proposal. I believe this committee will avail themselves for additional day sitting to discuss this. I request, Chairperson, that we do not accept this report. We give the department 14 days. And so even if we sit on a Friday, it's fine with us. to give them 14 days to come up with a report on the status of our rivers in the country, because the status of the rivers will give us indication what is the situation on wastewater treatment plants. Let's just deal with that for now. Give them 14 days, come up with a current report on the status of our rivers in the country. Let them present that within 14 days to this committee. And Chair, if we've got to put one day aside just to discuss the trend of our water, then we do it. Where they get the money, how they deal with that, that's their problem, Chair. We must get the report within 14 days from the department.
So can we amend that recommendation? Perhaps having to receive the status of rivers and also the status of our own wastewater treatment plant. So that we get a clearer picture as to what we have as a country in terms of our water resource and its quality. Indeed, whether we are protecting our resource or not. So you have your Water Research Commission. That is literally a phone call away from you. It is one of your entities that report directly. I would have imagined that you're supposed to be collaborating quite closely with them as you do all what you are expected to do, producing such a report. They were here and they did indicate to us that they certainly do have such capacity. I just don't understand why you are not making use of that, capacity. That is within reach. So that would be the type of recommendation going forward, and having to, before we arrive, having to schedule or reschedule according to our program for the department to come back to ask on the specific issues. And that would have been my additional or rather amended if members are fine with that. Be fine. Okay. Okay, the report remains a work in progress on the part of the department. And then lastly, we have AMG.
Supporting you and giving you the information you would like for you
If you don't get that, you don't give someone a chance. But I will give the report also to the minister to say we need to do something from all the reports that we presented today. Tell the NTA, the agency is going to be presented by Myers, which I think is ready to do that. I hope this one is better than the previous presentation.
water to the Tweer Gopi spread, and then the Western Basin, the figures are indicated in the three colors of the Western Basin, the Western Basin, and the Eastern Basin. The empty risk to the Vaal River system is a huge, huge concern, and the Vaal River system is also in the public space now, insofar as we're dealing with interlinking. This indicates the risk to the Vaal River system in terms of the flow chart. Now, the government's response to mitigate the risk virus around AMG, this is again a history of what happened. Once September 2010, the IMC was established in AMG. They have a team of experts who was appointed by the department and the Department of Mineral Resources. They have then a report entitled Mine Water Management in the Witwatersrand Goldfield with special emphasis on AMD. Six recommendations for AMD mitigation. We have a parallel study, AMD Long Term Feasibility Report, 2012-2014. And in December 2010, recommendations sanctioned by the Interministerial Committee. In February 2011, the Interministerial Committee report approved. The recommendations that came from 2011, on the left-hand side you see the original recommendations that came from 2011 to the IMC, and then on the green slide, the right-hand side, you see the progress or update since 2018. So the stopping of the decant in the Western Basin was achieved, was tracked. Preventing of the decant in the Eastern and Central Basin achieved or ingress control to reduce loss of clean water to mined waste, pending work of the expert team, that work is still in progress for further review. And then on the AMD treatment, the short term, neutralization and metal removal is achieved on track, long term, desalination for leakage. That's work that's in progress. To improve monitoring, research and development, technology innovation, pending pilot trial demonstration of selected technologies with the Water Research Commission. Other AMD sources, example, tailing facilities, rock dumps, low-grade facilities, that work is also pending work of the department. Marius and his team are in deep discussions and deliberations with the Water Research Commission experts. The Water Research Commission then the funding. In terms of the funding, the funding mechanisms of the environmental levy, which is the Department of Environment, our one is the waste discharge charge system, which is the department's levy, which is now underway in terms of being supported by the National Treasury, and of course, then that is to be implemented. Project implementation, in April 2011, the Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority was directed by the then minister to implement emergency works for the short-term solution. On the 22nd of April 2014, there was concurrence between the National Treasury and the department to fund the AMD project off budget using the Lesotho Highlands water project loan, which was a 43 billion rand government guarantee, 18 billion for AMD, and 25 billion for the Lesotho Highlands Water Project. The cost recovery is important and is done by the Vaal River Tariff, environmental levy, and the way the established system to come online. It's a 33% cost recovery from Vaal River Tariff, 67% cost absorbed by government fiscus until 1890, and then subsequently 67% sharing between the government and mines. Environmental levy, the waste discharge system is to be implemented. So the work that has been done between us and the National Treasury. On the 19th of May 2016, the TCCA directed, or given a directive to implement long-term solution. long-term solution is sustainable expansion, enables reclaimed AMD to be used beneficially for industry or for business. Long-term solution as a business case and augments the value supply. Reclaimed AMD is usable and needs validation to lead to that table. The project status in the short term, the project is complete and fully operational in 3 phases. The total capital cost was $2.2 billion. The O&M treatment neutralization cost was 5 rand per cubic. In the Eastern Basin, we give the progress day commencement in 2014 and then treated water released into less box trains. Central Basin commenced 2013 and the operational since May 2014. Western Basin is the commencement in December 2011. And the surface is planned to be eradicated by August 2012. These are just again the Jefferson slides or photographs showing the current status of the plant. The long-term solution, the potential deficit in BRS in AMD is not treated for beneficial use, which could imply water restrictions in Kaohsiung, exacerbated in drought conditions. AMD purification, desalination and reuse the strategy to augment the vulnerable system, and the vulnerable system yield model confirms AMD desalination increases supply potential in the vulnerable system. Feasibility study from July 2013 recommends expansion, short-term solution into long-term solution for beneficial AMD reuse. Potential off-takers for the desalinated AMD water example, and what, which is the East Rand Water Company, the Kurileni, Mistralogy, Global Water, Rand Water. The project status in terms of the long term, the challenges. In March 2016, the Minister of, then Minister of Finance requested the Minister of Water and Sanitation to separate the AMD project funding from the Institute of Highland Loan and Government. If separated, that would mean that the LTS is unfunded or lacks a business case of funding, and therefore it's not financially viable. In August of 2018, this year, we received a letter from the then Minister of Finance. The Minister of Water and Sanitation responded to say that he needs to consult 4 ministers. The Ministers of Finance, Environmental Affairs, and Mineral Resources to deliberate on the matter of the separation. Intention is to shape a CAB memo seeking cabinet ratification on the new way forward. Then in August, the Minister of Finance indicated readiness to participate in the CAB. In other words, the 28th September, National Treasury advised that only Minister of Finance and our Minister are required to deliberate on the matter. So our Minister will be having a meeting with Minister Mboweni. Depending on the resolution of the vote, the TCTA was given an instruction to halt further work on the long-term solution. And then the review of the AMD long-term solution implementation is independent of the TCTA. That review is what we are really finding out. Then, the parallel actions dealing with the long-term solution to address fiscal concerns. What that simply means, Honorable Chair and members, is that why should the current taxpayer be paying for what is the sins of previous mining companies or previous mine owners, etc. So that is what the fiscal concern and what is the buy-in that we must seek from the mining houses or through the Chamber of Mines, or the Mineral, what is now called the Mineral Council, on what their contribution or input would be. So the most current risk of AMD and the vulnerable system yield model is to assess water supply, and it must be implemented immediately, or if it's amenable to be deferred, or it cannot be, or it can be phased. I think the phased approach is something that, that would be a prudent suggestion. The process is underway between the departments, the planning and the PSP work. Report is due on the 31st of March 2019. The DW, the Department and the Water Research Commission, leading core expert team, supported by the Department of Mineral Resources, the Council for Geoscience, and the CSIR, for updated options, analysis, and current relevance of recommendations in the 2013 feasibility report and the 2010 IFC report, which was the 8-year timeline. So to secure the interim agreements of potential off-takers for desalinated AMD water users, this will establish a revenue stream. In other words, what it means is that we have to have supply agreements concluded and put in place, uptake agreements. The timeless conclusion of the government will allow the long-term solution to be accelerated should an amplified risk to the VRS water security be identified. Then, just some of the national AMD mine water management initiatives that are done or done by the branch regulations, and also our water policy team, which used to report to me but is now reporting to the COO. Then the AMD mine water and other managing areas in CRES, the strategies for AMD, impacted mine water mitigation drafted implementation by CMAs in the provincial office. With the government notice 704, which deals with regulations for water resource protection, the mining sector is currently under review to include a financial provision for mitigation of related water resource impacts. I think the discussion that we have to have with the DMR, with the Department of Mineral Resources, is that the financial provision for mining is embedded with them, and we must be able to have access, the Department of Water must be able to have access to mitigate or to deal with rehabilitation to the water resource we have. Then the waste discharge system and the environmental levy is something that we will come back to the committee to give further information on how we are going to implement that in order to invoke the political faith principle. Then other partnerships that help us along the way is the Strategic Water Partners Network and the National Business Foundation. That is the collaboration between government and the private sector. Government and mining sector collaborating on sustainable mine water projects. It creates jobs, it creates food security, it gives rise to new businesses, and also focuses on rural development and women empowerment. And the Mine Water Coordinating Body, which is a partnership between government and the Mpumalanga coal mine, promotes integrated efforts between all role players in the oil mine service sector. And then the department developed the mine water policy, the national policy. We just got the 12 policies. Just a high-level summary of the mine water policy principles. I'm just not going to go through everything in the interest of time. I'm just going to say what was the aim. It is to be considerate of existing applicable legislation regulations, provide high-level direction on amalgamating an inclusive and adaptive approach, mine water management, and the premise of sustainable development. And I talked about the apportionment of liability, that is the one issue that will come into play, and then mine water stewardship, which is the partnership approach towards how we manage mine. That is where I will stop, Chairperson. Mr. Kidd, do you want to add anything or amplify something that we put in the presentation?
My answer.
I'm just asking.
No.
Okay, I'll reply back to you. Just to remind me, I'm not sharing.
Yeah, no, it's fine. We can proceed. Maybe just to
remind each other members what we are dealing with here on the MG is a continuation of our discussion that we had with the TCGA on the 10th of October. And the main focus there, granted we have a short-term solution, we're more about following up on our 2015 discussion that we had with the department, especially as it relates to long-term solution. And that is associated with the capacity to operate and run with those solutions. So that has been our main area of interest. You can continue. Just as a reminder for ourselves as well.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable PM and Honourable Members. If I could just maybe ask, can you just go to that slide, the parallel actions, project paper number 2. I think that's probably the most important slide. And just carry on one of the last slides.
Go down.
That one. Chair, I think what Mr. Singh said, what's currently happening is that in all the TCGA with the implementation of the long-term solution. Just in short, what you said about the short term is running well, all three bases are running well. We're getting stuff now and then, there's a fire burst, or we had a problem at the eastern base now with people. We're one of the transformers were burned, but it's solved, and we keep the level of the water below the environmental critical level. So that's exactly what we were told by the portfolio committee. So everything is done, the water is treated, but it's partially treated. So the next step is now to take this water to a level where you can use it for either potable use or for industrial use. So that's what's called the long-term solution. Now, since there's a problem with funding, what we're doing in the meantime, whilst the minister still has to sort out what the funding arrangement will be, we've now embarked on a few different activities. The one is what we're doing there is we're looking at what is really the situation in the mold of the system. How serious is it? Because if we remember years ago when we started with this, this was identified as probably one of the biggest challenges for the mold of the system in terms of water security. So that's still the case. However, we're just going back while we've got a while, maybe 3 months or 4 months, is to look at exactly what is the vulnerable system doing at the moment. Because now you have 2 years of information since we started dumping this partially treated water in the vulnerable system. So what we're doing now is just to look at the models and to see how serious this is. The outcome of that could be either one of the three scenarios. The one is, if it is serious, we have to implement immediately, long term now. The other one is, it could be amenable to be deferred, so we can say, or we could say that, you know, you take 3 or 4 years. The other one is, what we hope will come out is that you can implement in phases. Now, what we're trying to do is, currently, in parallel with this, that's the second one, we've established a team of experts. And what we're trying to do is to look at technologies, to see how base technologies that we can apply. The other one is we're looking at ingress control. So we're trying to pump less water, because the water that's flowing in today, tomorrow you have to pump it. Now, where is this water coming from? Especially in the eastern basin, coming from the Westport spray. So in total, we're pumping in the two basins. I'm talking central and eastern basin. We're pumping about 160 megaliters. Now, if the information that we have can be confirmed, we can probably cut down with about 40 megaliters per day. It means that you can save money by pumping and by treating less water. How you do that is you've got two methods to do it. The one is you put a pipeline from the sewage works that's above or upstream of the treatment plant, and you let the water run down past the treatment plant so that it doesn't get flow into the underground systems, or you treat the water at the source, in other words, at one of the wastewater treatment plants. So then you, by doing so, you're actually taking the water out of the system that feeds the underground network. So this is actually the best way to do it, but we are doing the test now, and we hope to come up with results by the latest in March 2019, because then you can save a lot of money in terms of pumping and tubing. So this is what we're doing in parallel with the decision that needs to be taken by the ministers in terms of what are we doing with the funding, whether it's going to be separated or not from the Sutu Island Water Project guarantee funding.
Are we done then? Scenario, you currently have your water levels at whatever point they are at as we speak now, you might wish to comment about the extent in which your industry has been complying in terms of your acid mine drainage or acid water rather. And the best case scenario, here is water source. It is treated until at this level and can be taken further, and this is water that we can make best use of. Whether or not we shall still be able to talk about any further sourcing of water from the Sutu or otherwise. Here is water that is being treated. It is underground water. It is water that comes out of any mining activity. It's a lot of water. Whether or not, again, another worst case or best case scenario, your valuable system expected of it to be able to reach a point where it dilutes that water. Currently, the challenges that are there, whether or not those challenges will still be there, given the volumes of water that we have within that system, especially having to be expected to deal with your long-term solutions. Of what we have currently. I'm just interested as to those scenarios. We did go, was it 2015, we went to one basin, and I was dealing with a short-term solution. We're told of all of conspiracy theories, if I were to use those words, within a set period of time, if nothing happens, the CBD in Johannesburg areas, expect, flooding and all what it takes. I think that time came and went by. Hence, I am saying conspiracy theory. What is the real story? Is the mind coming your way, Mr. Papa? No, sir. Dr. Kali? For now, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think I think we're on the right track with this. I think the long-term solution most probably will be is getting off-takers of that money, of that water, which at the moment it seems it's somewhere around 140 megalitres to 240, if I look at your diagram. Have you spoken to the potential off-takers like Sasol and Elba? What is their feeling about taking on that water? Because if you clean it, I think Sasol cleaning of water, not using it for drinking water, will most probably be the quickest way of dealing with this matter. So I just need to get the sense, you know, how far are they with this potential off-takers? Thank you. Sir.
Yes, thank you very much for the report. As on the things like it's been displayed here, my clarity seeking question will be on the, because there was a feasibility study, but that was planned. I think somewhere in 2010, if I'm not mistaken, where they were looking at the, or where they were addressing the acid mine planning, especially on east and central and western, in terms of underground mining buildings. I just wanted to check as to, does this long-term cover that physical study? If not, then what is it that might come out of that particular physical study? Because in my understanding, that physical study was concluded in 2013. And then out of those recommendations on the physical study, what is it the department has made in terms of achieving those particular phases that were there in those particular reports? This is the second question I'm usually requesting to understand going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Mr. Mbun, can you pass the mic?
Water, it's why it's running. What is the response from this company, so they need to buy. We need to buy this water that we have disparaged. Then lastly, we say that we have to look at the mine closures when they close, because this problem of acid mines because of the mines that were closed a long time ago. Now it has come back to us, who did not even have any benefit from those mines. There's mining that is taking place as we're speaking now. And they might be closed. Some are open, carved, and the like, which have an effect on the walls. Who monitors? Who should be monitoring the disclosures and processes in the line? And who should take decisions on how the report after monitoring should be taken care of? Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe it's one quick one. I had to a point where I even invited, I can't even remember the company's name, and later it got to be more than one. They were showing an interest in being involved in this basin. The question I'm asking here is whether you do have the budget, number one, related to that is a question of capacity on the part of the department to operate this basin, and also linked to this is also a question related to whether you are able to go out there and source those people who have such budgets. For them to be able to do what is expected of them, whatever conditions that we might wish to enter into with. Given the challenges that at the time you spoke about the department in relation to what is required in terms of the old budgetary issues.
Thank you, Chair. A lot of questions. I'll try to talk to some of them, or most of them. Chair, you asked about the worst case and best case scenarios. If I can just divide that in two, in terms of the water levels. Remember when we had the problem when it started in the early 2000s? The biggest issue was the decant of acid mine drainage. Decant meaning that the water flows upwards and then starts flowing up. So you have raw acid water actually flowing into the rivers. That was one of the first things that we need to stop. We stopped that. The next one was to make sure that the other water tables that were rising at the time because the people or the mines stopped pumping. Also in 2008, they stopped pumping in the eastern and central basin. So what Parliament said, we have to stop that water and make sure that it doesn't exceed the so-called environmental critical level. We also managed to do that. So that was the first sort of crisis that we had to that we deal with, and I think we're dealing with that properly well. That's why we've got the plants in operation and they're doing well. The second one is now that you pump that water and you partially treat the water, so you take all the acid out, you take most of the metals out, but you still release the bad quality or the sort of neutralized water into the vulnerable system. And if I could just ask Chucky to go to that other slide where we've got the different the catchments, because that will help us a lot. Just go down. Further, the sketch, go up. That one I think is also talking to your question, Chair. If you look at the eastern basin, the central basin, the western basin, the eastern basin discharges into the Blesbok Strait. In other words, the water that we're pumping from there and treating goes into the Blesbok Strait, goes to the barrage. unfortunately it's not clear, but the big, the first reservoir you get is the Vaal Dam. So now you can see that all the basins, the eastern and the central basins, after the water has been treated, is dumping it into the barrage and it's not going to the Vaal Dam. So the Vaal Dam is not impacted with the AMG, it's lower down. The western basin is discharging the Crocodile River, so that doesn't affect the area here. So if we're dealing with this, we're actually not solving the problem at the Vaal Dam, we're solving the problem at the barrage. Also, another question was, why is this now all of a sudden a water security problem? The first phase is to do the emergency, that is done on the short term. But now this water is running into the barrage, and downstream of the barrage, you've got a commitment towards the people, the users downstream. It's a quality commitment. Now, if the water in the barrage is not suitable for the ore, it exceeds the 600 milligram per liter total dissolved salts, we have to release water from the Vaal Dam. Now, the feasibility study that I think the doctor also mentioned, at the time, we calculated more or less 5 times. So for every megaliter of water that you discharge from these two basins, you need 5 megaliters of good quality water, which we all know we cannot afford. And that's why this whole thing is so important to look at the water security. We cannot afford to release the good quality water to dilute the polluted water. So this is a scenario which I think, Chair, your question is around this. So in terms of the scenarios. Now, if we now find that we have a serious problem and that we have to do it, you need to do this, take this water quality to a better stage. In other words, that you don't need to dilute because you don't have the water. We have to implement something urgently. Now that urgently, if you go the conventional way to build a treatment plant, that's going to take you 2 to 3 years. So the only other solution that we have is to put up package plants. But that is something that the team of experts is now investigating, and we challenge with that. How are we going to solve this problem if there's a big issue about water security in the Gauteng province? The only way you can solve it is to put up package plants. And I've already found out that they will charge us about 11 to 13 rand per cubic meter to desalinate the water. Now there's a difference between neutralization, this is what we're doing here, and desalination is the further step to polish it for potable and for industrial use. So this is the situation that we're sitting with. If we have time, if you don't have to put up package plants, you can put up conventional plants or phase it in. But that will all depend on what is coming out of this situation analysis. Then in terms of Mr. Besson's question about the off-takers, yes, we have spoken to most of the off-takers. There's a lot of potential. They are interested, but they're of course waiting for us now. And also it depends on the price that they're going to pay. So now how are you going to make it, how are you going to put a sweetener to the thing or the acid mine drainage wanted to treat it? I don't know, and I'm speaking out of turn, but you know, one of the things that you could think of is a security of supply. That's one of the sort of sweeteners that you may have, but I mean that you still have to go into the Department of Top Management, and if that's a solution, then it should help us for them to take the water. Remember, it's going to be more expensive to take this water, but unfortunately you also have to look at the environment, so we have to deal with this water. In terms of who wants this water, I think the users of South Africa must get used to the fact that we can drink treated acid mine drainage. You can even drink treated sewage water. It just depends on the price. And it's a paradigm, so people just have to get used to it because it's good quality water. The doctor, in terms of feasibility study, I think I've answered part of it already. What the feasibility said is exactly that, is to take the short-term solution into the long-term solution. So the short term is partial treatment, the long term is to take it to a level where you can sell it for potable or for industrial use. But that we are just checking in terms of, you know, we've got 2 years of experience now in terms of what was really discharged and what was necessary for dilution. Was it 5 times? Was it 1 time? We don't know. At the moment it looks slightly better than what we thought, but this is what we just have to review the long term solution. And we've got the luxury now of information that we've gathered in the last 2 years. Is Nguni, in terms of the ball dam status, I think I've dealt with that. So this is not the barrages, or this is AMG is not affecting the ball dam. We've got another challenge, and I think you also mentioned that you know, upstream, and that's now in the other areas, the Willy Ponds, not the Willy Ponds, the Bumalanga area. Those areas are also, there's a lot of AMD coming from that area, but I'll deal with that later on. Just in terms of the price, you mentioned the 500. That 500 cubic meter is the neutralization process. That is not desalination. So an estimate is 5 rand for neutralization cubic meter, and about 13 to 15 rand for desalinated water. So to take this water from AMD to water that you can drink is approximately 20 rand per cubic meter, more or less. Now, you can compare that with the water that we pay in the different areas. So I think the cheaper the water, the more expensive the water gets, the more palatable this AMD will become. That's exactly what it boils down. The lack of mine closure, yes, it is a problem. We're dealing with Department of Mineral Resources, sometimes not so easy, because you know they are miners and we protect the water resources. So there's a bit of, it's not a conflict, but you know we work together with them, and that's why Steve also read you the mine water policy. That's exactly what we want to achieve. That so the department becomes more involved in you know dealing with water issues in mining. Chair, you mentioned about the people, people that are interested in this. This is not a money-making business, unfortunately. You always need to feed it or to sort of to help with government assistance. But this is why we want to put in the waste discharge charge system and also the environmental levy, because this will help to pay for this. And I think eventually when water becomes more expensive in South Africa, we will reach an equilibrium where this will, might be a palatable solution where you can sell the water to people and they will not discriminate against AMD or sewage water that's been treated. But there are many people interested in this and we are entertaining them. We listen to them. I have many people in my office looking at opportunities to come in. But eventually we'll have to go out on a official tender process procedure if we reach the stage where we know exactly where we want to go with this.
Okay, that shall be it. Again, it is work in progress. A good amount of work continues to be done in that regard. We are heading towards a long-term solution. And as I said, again, the work in progress, especially in the area of operation and maintenance of the basin itself, such a capacity, as you speak now, if I hear you well, it is in the private hands as it were. The developer is a kiss case that is currently operating.
These stands not operating, they're just managing the project for us, but it's actually Proxop, which is a private company. We went out on tender and Proxop got the deal, so they're dealing with, they're treating the water at Central and Eastern Basin. In Western Basin, we're doing it together with the mine themselves, and we partially sort of, the payment comes partially from us and partially from the mine.
Did you resolve the conflict?
I'm not aware of the conflict at the moment, so it was probably resolved here.
You know what?
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, Mamka?
I know that we need to have a meeting with the city and sometimes we need to have a meeting with the mayor around town, you know,
and then the working process concerning the problem. But I thought that at this time the action reaching the tell us exactly what happened with the problem, but will that person want the system?
My understanding was a question from under the union after the NMP. Do I understand about the current project? But that's clear to me. We had a meeting with the NMP with Costa, the Minister of Costa and our Minister, and the team from the with NMP. In which the agreement is that what is going to be done in Costa is to provide 150 million, which will provide the image, the sub-bridge pump. So once we are solved, the problem with the van will be somehow alleviated. However, that did not include the operation and maintenance, which the employee, there was an agreement with the employee municipality that when we hand over that responsibility to the Panasonic Health Service. So at that meeting, then it was agreed that somebody will, the accountant, the county council, are going to follow up with the employee municipality on that issue. Because after that agreement was an issue of everything going on from tender, where we don't have, we didn't have, even now I haven't seen that tender myself. But it was said that they had gone out from tender for oil and gas, so they were going to deal with that matter. So, in the far as
the let's agree that this is a separate matter altogether.
Mm-hmm.
It talks to the solutions of the earlier issues that we're dealing with as we went out on overtime. That's the detail that we are giving. Thanks for that. And members, we have a problem of time. The sitting starts at 2, right? And we have lunch, which is next door. Mom, can you really afford?
Yeah,
no problem, Mom. Straight to the point.
Okay. Ngicela ulandeleke ngifuna ukukhuluma mhlawumbe kanti uthisa lezinyimani ukuthi nokuthi engasiphethi lakasho bengasithela ukuthi le nto engibona siyenza yokhesikole ley'mali novele yibhubhuka emphakathi kuthola ukuthi iy'mane ziyadida zinamanzi kodwa ukuthaaada wenzile uto ngazo awunamanzi ophuza nakhomo even iy'kole even imfuyo yabo ukuthi zilandela umthetho ngabe yimuphi ukuthethwa yivumi nakho ivele njengongena oba ikakhulukazi sengene khona abantu manje ngiyabonga.
Specifically in Pumalanga area, where communities can go on
No, she is Clara. I go to the local manager. I stand under the bush.
Can you deal with the earlier issues, the one raised by Mr. Kaula, we deal with it in writing?
Yeah.
Can we deal with the earlier issues?
If I can just keep the right, the correct areas, I'll deal with it.
Can we deal with the other issues raised? Are you paid? Are you covered? Have you covered?
I think I'm covered.
Okay, thank you. Members, that's it. Again, once again, AMD is working on that until we find the ultimate solution. We have those two other submissions that have since been referred to. The tools raised by Mr. Basson calls on the 5th of November. Those are the details that we have to deal with. Obviously, that's now being clinically technical. Nadia was responding, saying it's 6